Blog Talk Radio.
I feel like this, and I want to kiss you, baby, don't say no.
Joining me this evening on the TLC network, the sister station to the TCB network. I'm using Jenny's studio at the moment because mine is still ransacked with songs that I have to delete. Until then, I'll be on here. And it's not bad being here. It's just weird. I'm not used to the phone number or anything. If you guys want to call in, the number is 516-387-1332. We're going over the book Baby Let's Play House, and the very first chapter is about Gladys, Elvis's first love, his mama. And I really appreciated that part of the book. I mean, it really gives you an idea of what type of person Gladys was, you know, her insecurities, her fears, her being a human being. You know, it didn't make her like a Madonna. It didn't make her like, you know, a very high person. It made her be like a human being, you know, because we all have troubles and trials and things. And it gave me a little insight of what type of person she is. You know, she was a no-nonsense type of gal. She was sassy. I like that. And she didn't take anything from nobody, you know. She just wanted to take care of her son and make sure that he had all the things that he needed in life. But here's the kicker. I have been doing a lot of soul searching the last, 24 hours, and I just don't think Baby Let's Play House is the right book for us at this time, because we've heard enough about Elvis and his women. You know, Elvis had lots of women, you know, and that's no big thing for the king of rock and roll, or the king of foreplay, they all say, but it is kind of a subject that we really don't need at this time. I mean, I don't know. I'm just trying to say that it just doesn't feel right to be doing Baby Let's Playhouse when there's so many other Elvis books out there that talk about his life and the funny stories and the people he knew that isn't always about what he did behind closed doors in the private. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if you guys agree with me. I'm hoping some of you do, but I mean, I've been doing some soul searching and I've had a few people, you know, tell me that they just don't know if they want to hear about it right now. And it's not just because of that, because there's not that many people. Maybe there's like three. But it's more about what we want to learn about Elvis Presley. Do we want to learn the person Elvis Presley was? Or do we want to learn how he made love? You see what I'm saying? I think it would be best at this time to learn about Elvis the person, not Elvis the sex symbol behind closed doors. I mean, granted, I love the part about Gladys because it showed her that she was a human being and she had feelings and all that stuff, but I just don't think at this time we should keep doing this book right now. Now, there could be another time later on, you know, when we can read it, you know, but for some reason, I'm not in the mood anymore. And see, the thing is, when you do book clubs, you got to be in the mood for the book, right? If you're not in the mood for it, then it's just a complete waste of time to be reading something. I can't get into a book that I'm not into. So right now, I'm just not. Now, there is the possibility of two books right now that I was thinking about replacing Baby Let's Playhouse. We can read Elvis and the Memphis Mafia, which is lots of stories about his life in that book. And people are calling that the Elvis Bible of facts. Or we can read Elvis and Gladys, which will just be about, you know, his younger days. It won't be about anything past the age of when his mama died, I don't think. So I'm thinking about it. I'm not sure. Let me get some callers in here and see what they think. Hello.
Hello.
Hey. Did you hear what I had to say?
I did.
Yeah, I just had a little soul searching, you know, and I thought to myself, hello. I'm just not ready. Hey, Mr. Brandon.
Hey.
And Anne, too. You know, I really think that maybe we should focus more on Elvis, the person, and not Elvis's bedroom habits at this time.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree,
well, you agree because you're a dude, and you don't want to hear about how another dude does it with other girls. That's why.
Oh, no.
Which I can understand. We do have a few. I do understand. We do have a few. Excuse me, my phone just started going off. But we have about three or four guys that listen to these book clubs, too, so I can understand. It's a little uncomfortable, but...
Well, you can actually say about four because I'm new to the network and the channel, and I was chiming in and checking it out. Brandon showed me a link, and I found it pretty interesting. And I like the way the... Elvis and Gladys book probably sounds because Brandon's got me interested in Elvis, and I am a bass player, so the man knows how to rock, so yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's cool, Brandon's friend. What's up, man?
Oh, my name's Justin, but you can just call me Ellis. Justin. That's my last name.
What do I call you? I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Ellis, E-L-L-I-S.
Ellis. All right. I can remember that. Well,
yeah, it's pretty close to Elvis, though.
The thing that I was going to do this evening is I was going to read you an insert of each book I decided to be voted on, okay? And the one with the most votes, all right, gets to be read.
Gotcha.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to do, because this Elvis and the Memphis Mafia has a lot of facts in it if you want to know about Elvis Presley, the man. But Elvis and Gladys has a lot of backstory about his mama and him before he, you know, became middle-aged. Yeah, but it only talks about, you know, from childhood to when Gladys passed on. So there's not going to be anything talking about 60s or 70s in this book. But it's going to be good, I know. I'm just saying, those two are the ones I'm kind of in the mood for at this time. So what I was going to do tonight, everybody, was I was going to read an insert out of each book, and you guys can decide what you want. I'll get it up to the listener. Both books are pretty thick, so it's going to take us a while to read either one. But it's not going to be talking about Elvis's sex life. I just can't do that at this time. I don't feel like it. It doesn't move me. You know what I'm saying?
That's his business.
Well, it might be his business, but you better believe it. I'm going to read this book on my own with or without you ladies. Just because, you know, I want to know what's in that book. But I don't feel like reading it on air right now. Just don't.
No.
I would like to see what's in it first before I make that decision. And the only way to know what's in it is if you read it, correct? So I'm going to have to do that. I'll take it with me to Arkansas and read it on my own time and see if I even would want to read it next time. I did talk to Elena Nash yesterday, the lady that wrote this book, Baby Let's Play House. I talked to her briefly, and I asked her a question. I asked her, where did she get the information about Gladys being married once before Vernon, and it only lasted 2 days, and it was with a man who was already married?
Mm.
And she told me that she got it from Elaine Dundy, the lady that wrote the book Elvis and Gladys, because Elaine Dundy went to Tupelo, Mississippi, and stayed for 5 months and befriended everybody that knew the Presleys and the Smiths. And she got to learn all the dirt of the Smith and Presley family. And that's where Elvis and Gladys is coming from. And I asked Elena, I was like, you mean the dirt? Are you talking about, like, is Elvis and Gladys a gossip book as well about what people thought of the Presleys and Smiths in Tupelo and in Alabama? And she goes, most of it. So
it could be
about what the family has to say about the relationship between Gladys and Elvis and what happened and what happened in the town when they were, you know, living there and things like that. So there's going to be a lot of information, but it's from people who knew them. It's not like it's Gladys didn't get to even have an interview long enough to tell the world what she thought of her son. You know what I'm saying? So it's going to be about people who, you know, gossip in a small town. So get that in your minds. But I asked Elena Nash, and she said it's about gossip. But then again, she can't be talking because Baby Let's Play House is gossip, too. It's just done in a different manner, you know, other people talking about how they felt about Elvis. But the thing is, I think it's going to be good because it does have a history, whether it's gossip or not, with Elvis and Gladys. She did go to the library. She did do her research, and she did look up everything she possibly could look up about Gladys and Elvis and Vernon. So it will be, you know, an informative book, but there won't be no talking about women in it, that's for sure, except for Gladys. But also, Elvis and the Memphis Mafia is the Elvis Bible, and it gets to know Elvis the person, and it kind of skips a little bit about the women. So that's a good thing, too. There's two books. I'm interested in both. So, okay. I just wanted you guys to know I had an epiphany, and I was soul searching, and I thought, I just don't feel like it right now. You know, it don't move me. So we're not going to do Baby Let's Playhouse. I'm going to put it up and read it myself and see if it'll ever be acceptable on my show. Okay, so thank you. Sometimes I'm quite brilliant, aren't I?
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna play an Elvis song, okay, guys? And then I'm going to read my disclaimer because I kind of skipped that part. And then I'll get you guys back on, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so let's wake up with some Promised Land.
Oh, get on. I left my Norfolk, Virginia, California, home of mine. Straddled that Greyhound and rode him into Raleigh and on across Carolina. I had more trouble to turn into a struggle halfway across Alabama. Well, the town broke down and left us all stranded in downtown Birmingham. Well, right away I bought me a through train ticket right across Mississippi clean. I was on that midnight flyer out of Birmingham smoking in the New Orleans. Somebody help me get out of Louisiana, just help me get to Houston town. There are people there who care a little about me and have let the poor boy down. Hey.
Everybody is awake now because that was a good song. Okay, so got Sherry and Ann and Brandon and his friend Ellis. Let's see here. I didn't read my disclaimer. I was rocking to the song so well I didn't do what I wanted to do.
got lost in the music.
I got lost in the music, brother. It happened. Okay. So I'll do this live while I have you guys unmuted. I don't care. I want everyone listening to know what I'm about to say is based upon my personal beliefs and opinions and not the beliefs and opinions of others. This show is for y'all to make up your own conclusions. My 34 years of research, guys, I mean, my God, that's a lot, it brought me to my conclusions. This show is to help y'all make up your own minds. We at the TCB Network believe, and the TLC Network, that Elvis is alive. Yeah, we believe that. We really do. And it's been proven to us many times, and if you stick with our network, maybe, just maybe we can prove it to you guys, too. But anyways, our special guy gives us the opinions on this show. I give my opinions. My friends give their opinions. And we talk about books. And if you have a problem with that, or if your butt hurts, or somebody pay-paid in your Cheerios, just let me know, and I'll get you in touch with my lawyer, and you can talk to him about it. The graphics are usually made by Miss Tanya, but she is not doing so well, you know, so keep her in your prayers, okay? We love her and we miss her. But that's it, my disclaimer, and I'm sticking to it, okay? This is for entertainment purposes only, all right? Just got to throw that out there. All right, so there was my disclaimer. Miss Sherry, are you doing okay in Alabama?
I worked out today.
It happens, girl.
Yeah, that's just been the past couple of weeks have been kind of rough.
It's like Jesus takes a wheel, please.
I turned loose of it weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, you just keep on trucking, girl, because that's the only way us strong women know how to make it. Just keep on keeping on.
And I appreciate it.
You're welcome. But anyways, I'm glad you called. It's been a while, and I missed you. Thank you so much for calling. And Miss Ann, you have a toothache and an earache, girl. Why the heck are you calling?
I wouldn't let you down, Shauna.
Oh, I would be just fine, honey. I'm a big girl. I know how to wear those big girl panties. I got you. I got you.
No, I'll soon be here.
Well, I thank you for, you know, tuning in. You don't have to talk much. It's okay. I understand that pain is just awful. So thank you for calling in, though, sweetheart. Okay, thank you. And I got Brandon and Ellis. I'm glad you guys called. I got two guys on air. It's not every time we have a show we have two guys. It's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm ready for it.
All right. So, like I said, we're going to go through, I'm going to read an insert of Elvis and the Memphis Mafia, and then I'm going to read one from Elvis and Gladys, and then we're going to decide from there, okay? I want to tell you something before I begin, though. The Elvis and the Memphis Mafia book is one of the most acclaimed Elvis books written to date. It's written by Elena Nash, but it's also with the help of Billy Smith, Elvis's cousin, Marty Lacker, who Elvis respected very much so, and Lamar Fike, who Elvis also loved and respected. So there's three Memphis Mafia members that are not Sonny, Red, and Dave, okay? These are by three men that loved him very much so. So it's not going to be too much about gossip. It's about what they wanted people to know about Elvis. So, and Billy Smith is a really good guy. He's a friend of mine. His son, Danny, does videos on YouTube. He's the Memphis Mafia kid. And I'll tell you straight up, Billy Smith has never said anything bad about Elvis. Not that I know of, anyway. So I know this book should be pretty good because Billy Smith don't lie about that anyway. We know what he has to keep inside, but some things he will say. And Elvis and Gladys is a book that Elaine Dundee wrote by staying in Tupelo for 5 months and living with the people and the family of the Smith and the Presleys to figure out who Elvis and Gladys were. So there's this one as well. Okay, so this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to play a song to get me in the mood, and I'm going to read, the very first thing I'm going to read is Elvis and Gladys insert. Okay, guys?
Okay. Sounds cool.
All right, so this is one of my favorites. This is For the Heart. Miss Victoria reminded me of something. See, I had a very long day today and award ceremony for my kid and stuff, and my mind's just not working, plus the vacation I'm getting ready for. But anyway, I didn't say our special guy's opinion about Baby Let's Playhouse, what we read. So I guess it would probably be good to read it to you guys real fast. Because, you know, he did bother writing it, so I might as well read it to you, okay? Hold on. Let me do this. This is his opinion about Babyless Playhouse, and then we'll be done with Babyless Playhouse, okay? Just listen to this. He said, trust Elena Nash to make money off a chapter about Gladys, off of a chapter about Gladys she copied from another book. All that stuff happened before I was even born, and much of it was never talked about. She married Vernon in 1933, so anything that happened before that, she never mentioned, and I never asked. If she had a two-day marriage to a married man, then it would be annulled, but show me the proof. It's more likely to have been written off as a two-day fling that went wrong. As far as I know, she had four sisters and two brothers. Doll Smith, her mother, died in 1935, my grandmother, so I never knew her. I do remember the Rethra Smith tragedy, though, my aunt losing her child. I'd be 12 years old in Tupelo just before we set off for Memphis. Harold Lloyd was her son and the gatekeeper at Graceland before Vester, my uncle, was. It's all very complicated even for me to say who was with who. Bob was the second son of Anna Mounsell. He was my maternal grandfather. Bob married his first cousin, Doll Mounsell. In 1880, he was living east of Saltillo, Mississippi, with his parents. On September 1918, he registered for World War I draft and was living at Lee County, Mississippi, and working as a carpenter in Alabama. He was described as tall, stout, with blue eyes and dark hair. By 1920, his whole family was living in Lee County, Mississippi, Main Tupelo Road, 4 miles east of Tupelo. In 1930, they were living in the Tupelo Road in Lee County, Mississippi. Bob died a little over 2 years before I was even born, but that's where my main roots are from. The true story of Vernon going to jail was that he was sentenced to 3 years, but he only did 9 months. Mama and many locals wrote to Orville Bean, the man he swindled with the forged check, to intervene, and he got out of prison after 9 months. Billy Smith's father, my cousin, Travis, went to the penitentiary with Vernon, but my grandfather got my uncle Travis out of jail and left my daddy Vernon there when it first happened. He said it would teach him a lesson. When we first arrived in Memphis, we lived on Washington Street. For one thing, we had inside plumbing. It was amazing. That was a lot different, and I remember that it took a while for everyone to get jobs, and one of my cousins stole all the money we had and stole Daddy's socks. Daddy was more upset and mad over socks than he was the money. Vernon and Travis looked for jobs in Memphis, and they even wore out the soles of their shoes. I remember them cutting pasteboard to put in their shoes to cover the holes. We had to eat turnip greens for a month, so I swore then that I would never touch another turnip grain after that, and I don't guess I ever did. But there's not a lot to say about those first few pages, which is mostly genealogy anyone can find on Google. Mama drinking out of a paper bag simply means the strong brown paper bag with the bottle inside, which was traditional for many to do. It hid the contents of what you were drinking and how much you were drinking. She was happier those days before moving into Graceland, and she died from a heart attack brought on by hepatitis. Mama was a good person. I actually remember her as an outgoing and fun-loving person. She was always laughing and carrying on, but those photos of her later on make her look sad because she was sick, as well as being sad about me going to the Army. She was generous like me, but she also had a quick temper. Daddy and I knew how far we could push her. She worried a lot, and she was not in good health. She was always close to her family, but I was her heart. She adored me. Mama, Aunt Cletus, Uncle Johnny, and Aunt Lillian all had that Cherokee blood, dark skin, dark eyes, and high cheekbones. Aunt Lavelle and Uncle Tracy looked like their daddy, blue eyes with lighter skin. We heard stories about Mourning Dove, but not that much talk about her. We were only told that she was a beautiful woman, and she was Cherokee. Vernon, Daddy, was never fond of working and was late for work many, many times. He only worked a couple of places before I became famous, unlike Mama, who had worked at several places before I became famous. One thing Daddy was good at was numbers, especially dollar signs in front of him, and I trusted him. He did look out for my interests and his own. Travis was the first gate guard that I had, so when we moved into Graceland, Vernon asked Billy Smith's daddy to be the gate guard, just as he's been at our house on Audubon Drive. They lived in a big white house that was on the property, and in fact, that's the same white house that I tore down with the bulldozers in the 60s to make room to ride horses with. So there you guys go. There's his opinion, which I almost forgot to read. Please forgive me on that one. It happens. I got mama brain, okay? It happens.
It's okay.
But as you know, he gave us a complete little history of some of his family members. That was pretty cool. And do you guys have anything to say about his opinion? Do you want me to go down the list, or somebody want to talk? Let me know. Or forever hold your peace. No?
No, I didn't hear last week's book reading, so I have my
comment.
Oh,
it was about Gladys. Yeah.
I'd like to say something, Shauna.
Miss Anne's going to say something. Okay, go ahead.
I'd like to thank Elvis for letting us into his life and his personal details with his family. It's very nice of him.
Of course it was. It's really nice that he took the time to do that. You know, I mean, like I said, I asked him if we should keep reading the book, and he said he doesn't mind any book. And I was like, you say you don't mind any book? And he said, I don't mind at all. Whatever. But I thought about it, and I am not fine with it. So, see, I don't always talk about smut when it comes to Elvis. I don't like it. Okay?
No.
I'm not that type of fan. I'm not that type of historian either. That would make me a very bad person. I'm really in it for the history, not for the dirt. You see what I'm saying? I would be a horrible, horrible news anchor because I couldn't talk about the dirt.
No, that's not you at all, Shauna. That's why.
I get enough of that reading it on Facebook in the articles. I don't need to be a newscaster. Screw that. But I'll tell you what, guys, thank you so much for listening to his opinion, and this is what we're going to do, the exact same thing I told you we were going to do about 7 minutes ago. I'm going to read you an insert of Elvis and Gladys. Are you guys ready?
Ready.
Yeah.
Okay, so here we go. I'm going to mute all you guys because I don't want to have any static or bad. And I also see you, Miss Sue. Hold on a minute. Let me read this insert, and I'll get you on the next time. Hold on. All right, here we go. This is Elaine Dundy in Elvis and Gladys. I arrived in Tupelo, Mississippi, Elvis's birthplace, in April 1981 to remain there with frequent side trips to Memphis and to the University of Mississippi at Oxford for 5 months until that August. Knowing no one and never have been in Mississippi before in my life, although my knowledge of the South was not exactly negligible, having spent my university years at Sweetbriar College in Lynchburg, Virginia, my awareness of the mores and manners of the South was broad and superficial rather than deep and concentrated. In any case, that was a long time ago, if any of my college mates had come from Mississippi or Tennessee, as they undoubtedly did, I had forgotten them. I wanted to enter a strange land, free and uneducated about the whole event, to await what would befall me. There must be something in a willingness to meet one's luck halfway, for I arrived in Tupelo on a Friday, and by that Sunday, I was listening to a sermon delivered by Brother Frank Smith, who had been the preacher at the First Assembly of God Church during the last years that the Presleys were members of its congregation. Afterwards, I was invited to join the Smiths for their Sunday meal prepared by Frank's wife, Corinne. Corinne Randell, as she had been before her marriage, who, though 6 years older than Elvis, had grown up in the same neighborhood. Becoming friends, Corinne and I soon fell into the habit of meeting for afternoon and evening coffee, two or three times a week. During these meetings, I questioned her accountability on every aspect of her childhood and adolescence in East Tupelo. The sights, sounds, smells, the weather, the work, the clothes, the schooling, the recreations, the First Assembly of God Church, the Depression, and the Recession. And as we talked, she found herself becoming as absorbed as I in the reconstruction of this particular past. She showed me her photograph album and generously loaned me several pictures. Previously refused to be interviewed, she did, but then she finally agreed to talk to me. And for her lucid descriptions of those bygone times, I owe special thanks. My next important friend in Tupelo was Phyllis Harper, feature editor and writer of the popular It Seems to Be Me column in the Tupelo Daily Journal, whose work was recently found its way into prestigious Southern homes. She, too, was a native of the area, having been raised at Fawn Grove, a farm in Ottawamba County, which is touched on in relation to Gladys's forebears. It was Phyllis who urged me to contact Professor Von Grisham. When I visited the University of Mississippi, he had just completed a definitive sociological essay, Tupelo, Mississippi, from Settlement to Industrial City, 1860 to 1970, for his letting me read before publication and for his several enlightening discussions with me on the subject afterwards. I am deeply obliged. This book is about Elvis. This book is about Gladys. This book is about the two of them in Tupelo and Gladys's family before. Gladys was born Gladys Love Smith, a pretty Southern girl crazy for music and dancing, who fell passionately in love with a handsome 17-year-old man child named Vernon Presley. And on January 8, 1935, in Tupelo, Mississippi, Gladys Presley gave birth to twins. One was stillborn. The other she named Elvis, a boy who would grow up to be the king of rock and roll. Here, for the first time, is the true story of Elvis Presley and his mother, a moving, tragic, real-life tale of love that created an American legend, the fame that broke his mother's heart, and the real facts behind her death and his own. So that's the insert for Gladys and Elvis. And I'm going to get you guys off mute now. So that's the insert for Elvis and Gladys book. Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting book.
Yeah. I'm sure her spending 5 months with the people of Tupelo and his family probably got some good tales in that one, right? Just know, guys, that the information that's in the book Elvis and Gladys is what Elena Nash put in Baby Let's Playhouse. Okay, that's where Elena got it from, because I asked Elena, where did you get this information on Gladys? She said she got it from Elaine Dundy's book, so just thought I'd throw it out there where she got it from. Okay, but it kind of sounds like to me she let Elaine Dundy do all the research for Gladys, and she just wrote what she thought about it. That's what I think anyway. So anyways, I'm going to play a song, and we're going to do the insert of Elvis and the Memphis Mafia. Okay?
Okay.
Just leave it to me. Don't ever be ashamed.
Guys, this is the insert from Elvis and the Memphis Mafia from Billy Smith, Marty Lacker, and Lamar Fike. Much has been written and said about Elvis, and with the exception of a couple of books, most of it has been untrue, half-true, and confusing, and just pretty much all lies. Throughout the years, we've had so many people ask us the truth was, and to give them a sense of what his life was really like. In this oral history, We hope we offer those two elements in a tasteful, balanced, good-feeling type of way. We could not have found anyone more perfect to take our words and present them to you in a more real and understanding fashion than Elena Nash. Not only is she an accomplished author and an experienced writer in the music field, she understands the entertainment industry. We thank her for the years that she has spent making this book come to life. We would also like to thank Sam Hughes and Bob Sillinger of the Dickens Group. Two, we want to acknowledge the truly wonderful life experience we were fortunate to share with Elvis Presley. The good times far outweigh the bad. This book is for the guys, especially those who were with him from the early years. Finally, we would like to acknowledge our families for their love and understanding and dedicate our portions of the book to them. Billy Smith, my lovely wife Jo, my sons Danny and Joey, my granddaughters Danielle and Eden and Stormy, and my grandsons River and Paris, and in memory of my parents Travis and Lorraine, and my brother Bobby also, to Sarah and the widow Norris. Marty Lacker, I'd like to thank my daughters, Sherry and Angie, Mark, Brenda, Brandon, Cody, and to Patsy for her contribution for the book and for putting up with me all these years. Also my sister, Anne, and the memory of my brother-in-law, Bernie. Lamar Fike, to my darling wife, Mary, and to the memory of my beloved mother, Margaret. This book is an exploration of Elvis's life with the good stories and not the bad, a monumental oral biography filled with joy, aching loss, and terrible perceptions of what people think are truth but isn't true. Elvis and the Memphis Mafia is the first capture of the king, the man and the phenomenon in his full complexity. Through revealing interviews with three of Elvis's closest friends, who were also his protectors and rescuers, Nash achieves the first true mapping of Elvis' psyche. Elvis' first cousin, Billy Smith, and the person he loved most after his mother, Marty Lacker, best man and wedding foreman of the Memphis Mafia, the hand-picked group of gatekeepers and confidants, and Lamar Fike, touring crew member who accompanied Elvis to the Army, where with Elvis from his teens to his final days and provide unique access to the greatest of all legends. The amazing revelations sweep through every aspect of Elvis's life, from the childhood seeds of his drug dependency, through his fear of his mother's life and his plan to change his identity, to his bizarre self-denial. The displeasure of others to this book is being made is not what we do here. We're actually trying to tell people the good of Elvis and not the bad. You don't need to be an Elvis fan to be awed by this book. It is so detailed, far-ranging, and coherent that it becomes a clear window on an entire era of Elvis Presley. The book's genius is in volume of fresh and flowing information. And, of course, Elena Nash is one of the finest, most perceptive chronicles and appraiser of pop music in America. So that's the insert from Elvis and the Memphis Mafia. So I've got Sue and Brandon back, and then I got Anne and Sherry. So, do you guys like that insert?
Yeah. It was pretty good.
That was confirmed.
Well, the thing is, I don't even know if we're going to be able to, maybe we should just do a vote about everybody that's listening to the book club. I was going to do it in the group and find out what book to read, but that'll take too long. So, okay, this is what I'm going to do. We have probably 5-6 people listening. I'm going to do a tally. Who wants me to read Elvis and Gladys? I'll ask you guys that are calling in, but if you guys are not in the studio, just type yes right now are no in the book club. Miss Sherry, would you rather me read, what would you like to vote on, Elvis and Gladys or Elvis and the Memphis Mafia?
The Memphis Mafia.
Okay, so you want Memphis Mafia. Okay, thank you. Miss Ann?
Definitely the Memphis Mafia, please, Shauna.
Okay, and Brandon said yes already, thank you.
Yeah,
and Miss Sue?
Yes.
What would you like me to read?
Well, I really would like to hear more about Gladys, but if everyone else wants to go for the Memphis Mafia, that's fine, too.
You're kind of like, well, it's about Elvis. I don't mind. Right? Like, okay.
Well, true. But, you know, I have enjoyed hearing more about her, and that's something I've never heard before.
Okay. And then Greg says Memphis Mafia. And Manette said Memphis Mafia. Well, you guys, Memphis Mafia won. I got Brandon wants it, Sherry wants it, Ann wants it. Sue said it's like doesn't matter, but then Greg wants it and Manette wants it. And Victoria wants it. So I guess it's Memphis Mafia then, guys.
Okay.
Guess it's Memphis Mafia. So that's what I'll do. I can read a little bit of the very first chapter tonight. I won't be able to do a lot because we only have 30 minutes left, but at least you know what I was planning. I'm glad I didn't get too far into Baby Let's Playhouse because I'm about to take vacation, so it's good to get it all cleared up tonight. You know, it's just best to get it done tonight. So I'm going to read the first little bit. I'm not going to be able to finish the first chapter, but I can give you an idea of what it's about. I can start right now, guys. I'll be right back, okay?
Okay.
I got something to tell you that I think you want to know. That my eyes are on you, baby, since a long time ago. Now I finally got the nerve and I'm gonna make my move. Now don't you try to turn me off, cause this is gonna be hard to do. I got a thing about you, baby, ain't nothing I can do. I got a thing about you, baby, a thing about loving you. About it, baby, your love was meant for me. Know that I can't do without it, it fits me to a T. Ooh, there's something about you, baby, can't get you off my mind. I know that I can't live without you, I think about you all the time. I got a thing about you, baby, ain't nothing I can do. I got a thing about you, baby, a thing about loving you. Ain't it just like a woman when she knows she's got a man? She'll ring you out and turn you about in the palm of her hand. Then she starts thinking that maybe she'll put you in a bind. She'll give you just a little love and it'll drive you out of your mind. I got a thing about you, baby, ain't nothing I can do. I got a thing about you, baby, a thing about loving you. I got a thing about you, baby, ain't nothing I can do. I got a thing about you, baby, think about loving you.
Okay, this chapter is called Tupelo. Marty Lacker. Dr. Hunt must have misunderstood Vernon's accent when Elvis was born, which is understandable because when Vernon pronounced Elvis, he always left out the L. Not too long ago, Dr. Hunt's daughter found his physician's record, and he'd written down the name as Evis Aaron. That's Aaron with two A's. I hope all those people who see the two A's on Elvis's gravestone and interpret it to mean he's not really dead, people such as Gail Brewer Giorgio, author of Elvis is Alive, will take note of that. It ended up Aaron with one A on a lot of things through the years, but Aaron with two A's was the right way to spell it, and Elvis is dead. One day in late 1966, I was talking to Elvis about religion, and he brought up Aaron with two A's, and I said, "That's something I've always wondered, Elvis. How come you spell Aaron with one A when it's two A's in the Bible?" Because Elvis might have been named from Vernon's best friend, Aaron Kennedy, but he always referred to it as a Hebrew name and how Aaron was the brother of Moses. And he said, "Well, back when I was growing up, a lot of people around Tupelo didn't spell right, you know. They didn't know how to spell." Elvis looked over at Vernon and said, "As a matter of fact, Daddy, from now on, I want my name written with two A's, especially on legal documents, all right?" That's why it has two A's on the gravestone today. Billy Smith. Dr. Hunt charged $15 for his delivery fee. Vernon couldn't pay it, so welfare had to pay it. Elvis was Dr. Hunt's 920th delivery. He was 68 when Elvis was born, and he died in 1952. Without ever knowing that baby was somebody special, not knowing that the baby he delivered was become a legend. Marty Lacker. There are two things people always talk about in trying to sum up Elvis from a psychological point of view. One of his relationships with his mother. The other is an obsession he supposedly had with his dead twin, Jesse. Lamar Fike. Dick Clark produced the first Elvis TV biopic, Elvis, in 1979. He had Kurt Russell talking to this shadow, which was supposed to have been Elvis's twin. That was fucking hilarious. Excuse me, guys, but I will tell you the show is rated R for a reason. Where the shit did that come from? I never seen Elvis talk to his shadow. I never heard Elvis talk to Jesse Garon. And he wasn't that twin obsessed. I was with Elvis about 3 years before I learned he was even a twin. He did tell me he had a twin, though. He also told me he had a twin toe on his right foot. I said, "What do you mean a twin toe?" Elvis said, "Well, some twins have toes that are webbed, and there's a little bit of extra skin between the second and third toes. And from that, I must have been an identical twin." But other than that, he never talked about his twin much. Gladys didn't either. I saw these toes, though. Elvis had real long feet. They were ugly, too. Billy Smith. Lamar believed that twin toe stuff, huh? That's funny. I did, too, for a long time. But Elvis never had webbed toes. He just told that about him and Jesse Garon on purpose. Boy, Elvis loved to tell a tale. He did have ingrown toenails a lot and three big warts on his hand. I guess if we sat down long enough, we might come up with some mystical bullshit for that, too. Lamar Fike. That lying dog, he tell me something and I just believe it. Marty Lacker. Elvis had the greatest imagination. He'd tell a lie with a straight face. He'd tell it something to you like he was joking, but he wasn't joking. You never could tell with him. Billy Smith. Albert Goldman wrote that Elvis heard Jesse Garon's voice all the time from the age of 4 and 5, telling him to do good deeds. He says this gave Elvis a split personality so that there was a good Elvis and an evil Elvis. Hell, that's the biggest bunch of bull that ever was. When people read that Elvis had a twin, they'd come up and ask about him, and Elvis would say, "He was born dead. I never knew him." On the other hand, Elvis thought there was a reason why Jesse was born dead, and he was the one who lived. He did say one time, if my twin brother had lived, do you reckon the whole world could have handled two of me? Elvis was much too vain to share anything. Lamar Fike. Albert said that Gladys used to take Elvis to Jesse's grave when he was a kid. That's another crock of shit. I don't think they knew where the grave was. Vernon went and he couldn't even find it. Billy Smith. Oh, hell. They all knew exactly where it was. They just didn't want somebody digging it up and holding the remains for ransom. The grave was never marked because they didn't have the money to buy a headstone. And by the way, Goldman says Jesse's buried in Priceville Cemetery. Actually, he's in another cemetery. I don't know the name, but it's out towards Saltillo. There's a little plaque for Jesse there in the meditation garden. And you'll see they spelled it Jesse, J-E-S-S-I-E, not Jesse, J-E-S-S-E. Although people always write it that way, and Dr. Hunt spelled it J-E-S-S-E on the birth record. He put an I in Garen instead of Jesse. Marty Lacker. I always wondered why the Presleys didn't have more children, especially since Vernon was such a lover boy. We used to call him Hair Trigger. Billy Smith. The best I can remember, Aunt Gladys couldn't have any more children. Elvis and Gladys says that she miscarried when Elvis was 7. I don't think so. I never heard anybody in the family talk about it, or Elvis either. Aunt Cletus and Uncle Vester didn't know about it either, and that's hard to keep something like that quiet. Dr. Hunt made no record of it, and he attended her until she moved to Memphis. Aunt Gladys supposedly went to the Tupelo Hospital, but people in her family didn't go to the hospital in those days. We didn't have money. Lamar Fike. I think it scared the heck out of Gladys when the twin died at birth. I don't think she ever got over it. That's why she was so protective of Elvis. She doted on him constantly. A smothering kind of affection, though. But he would also do it to her. He loved to pat on her, and he talked baby talk to her, and he called her satinin. He would whip through a paragraph, and I couldn't make heads or tail of it. But she could, and Vernon could, and Elvis would baby talk him too. I used to sit at that breakfast bar and wouldn't understand a damn word they said, especially since Elvis had that little stutter. It was like a foreign language when you hear all three of them speak together. Billy Smith. Gladys talked that way until she died. Satinin meant a real condensed round of fattening. And Aunt Gladys was always heavy. Elvis would pat her on the stomach and say, baby's going to bring you something to eat, Satinin. She called him Elvie, by the way, when he was little. He was her little Elvie. And he hated that when he got to be a teenager, so she stopped calling him Elvie. She also called him naughty. Like, you're a naughty boy, Elvie. You're very naughty. You guys, that's so cute. Elvie. Hey, Elvie. Don't you guys think that's cute?
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's something new. Nothing else to say? Did I catch you guys off guard?
Yes, you did.
Well, I heard you said that Elvis had a stillborn twin brother, and that's news to me. I didn't know that.
You didn't know that? Wow.
No, I'm,
you must be a little baby in the Elvis world right now.
Well, you call me an Elvis virgin, so.
Oh, boy.
It's a tragedy, but it's also kind of a blessing in disguise, because if he did have a twin that was alive, we don't know which twin would have got the music talent in the first place, and it's a good thing Elvis didn't.
Or they could have been like Ricky Nelson's twin boys, and they could have been their own group called the Presleys.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
He could sing bass, and Elvis can sing tenor.
Sounds
seriously
awesome.
Though, I mean, the family love to sing and love to dance, so I'm sure if Jesse was born, they'd have probably have been in some gospel quartet together or something. You never know.
Well, I just wanted to say one more thing. I wanted to thank y'all for having me, and you said it was rare to have multiple men on the same show
The call.
And you can look forward to having that more often now. I'm fully intrigued, and I want to thank you.
Oh, well, you're very welcome. I'm glad you're actually wanting to learn about Elvis. He's a very fascinating individual. He's like an onion. He had many, many layers.
So he's like Shrek?
Yeah, just like Shrek. That's where I got it from. I have a 7-year-old son, so I know that one by heart. But he was... You know, and I don't know if Brandon ever gets to talk to you about our special guy, but he's personally the same as he was then. I mean, in fact, Brandon gets picked on at least, once a week, and we don't even know if he's serious or not, because he'll tell us something and we think he's serious, but then a day later we knew he was joking all along. I mean, it's just like, whoa. It's crazy sometimes. Our special guy will tell us something, and I don't know if he's serious sometimes or if he's joking.
Yeah,
you can never tell.
Yeah, me and Jess are best friends.
Yes, I know. And you've known him a lot longer than I have.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't for Brandon, I probably wouldn't even be here with you guys, because he's the one that gave me a shot and made me an administrator in his group on Facebook, and that happened 3 years ago. If that hadn't happened, I probably would not be here right now doing this at all, period. I wasn't even thinking about doing radio, trust me. I just wanted to be in an Elvis group. I think it's funny. It's funny how things change.
Yeah.
I do believe that God brings people into your life for reasons, and I do believe that sometimes those reasons are for destinies and fate and all that stuff. I do think that way. I am the last romantic person, I guess, in the world when it comes to that, but I just feel like God has a purpose for me, and that's why I'm doing this. This is my purpose.
Amen.
So thank you guys for sticking with me and putting up with all my shenanigans. Thank you. I know I could be a handful sometimes. But, I'm going to keep reading this book. I just wanted to tell you guys, I'm very glad that you guys picked this book because it's pretty interesting so far. And I guess I'll just play another song, and then I'll read a little bit more until the end of the night, okay?
Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Let's see what song I've got for you guys. Oh, that's a long one. No, we can't play that one. Let's do It's Midnight, because I really like that
one. Maybe it's too late. I sometimes even hate myself for loving you. Trying to be strong, and nighttime comes along, and I start wanting you, wanting you. Where is all my self-control? I'm burning way down in my soul, and needing you. Wishing I could be the man I try to. Hating me for wanting to be with you. Knowing you don't love me like you used to. But it's midnight. Oh, and I miss you. It's getting late, and I know that we're high.
looking so much brighter in the new light. I ought to go to bed. I try to straighten out my head and just forget you. Oh, but it's midnight. Yeah, and I miss you. It's getting late, and I know that when I am weak. Funny how things have a way of looking so much brighter in the daylight. I ought to go to bed and try to straighten out my head and just forget you. Oh, but it's midnight. I miss you. It's midnight, and I miss you.
Lamar Fike. In a lot of ways, Elvis treated his father like he wasn't his father. And that has to go back to Elvis's formative years and what he went through while his father was in the penitentiary, the Mississippi State Prison. And it's a shame and the stigmata that followed after Vernon got out. Elvis never forgot it, even though he was only three, and just barely four while his daddy was gone. But Elvis and Gladys, hold on a minute, I gotta put this up. But Elvis and Gladys would go see him often. You're talking about something like 125 miles from Tupelo to Parchman. Friends or family had to take them. Gladys couldn't drive. A kid as sensitive as Elvis would remember that, and the charity of it all. Vernon had forged a check he'd gotten from Orville Bean for a hog. He either traced a new one on a blank or altered the existing one for a lot more than it originally was. Changed it from $4 to $40, I think, because he felt cheated on what he had gotten from the hog in the first place. Bean was a dairy farmer there in Tupelo. Vernon had worked for him before Elvis was born. Orville loaned Vernon $180 to build that little shotgun shack on Saltillo Road where Elvis was born. And then he rented the house to the Presleys. It was Bean's property until he got his money back, with interest. But Vernon's father owned the lot and lived next door. It's incredible that Vernon would try to pull that on Orville. But Elvis said Daddy was really sort of roped into the situation. He and Travis, Mama's brother, and a guy named Lether Gable, Billy Smith. Vernon always wanted more of things, and they got this bright idea. All I remember is my daddy telling me how they done it. They added the zero and changed the writing. And Vernon done most of that, because my daddy couldn't read or write except to sign his name. It was enough money that my daddy and Lether went to Texas. Vernon stayed in Tupelo and maybe bought stuff for his family, maybe not. Vernon wasn't as committed to his family as he should have been as far as providing. Gladys mostly done it all. He might go out and buy something for himself first before he brought anything home to his family. But Gladys was the opposite. She thought of Elvis, and that was it. Lamar Fike. One reason Vernon wouldn't have anything much to do with his father was he wouldn't bail him out of jail. But when Travis went to jail, J.D., and some other fella paid his bail, Lether got bailed out too. Vernon could carry a grudge to his grave about that. Billy Smith. Maybe J.D. thought he was going to teach Vernon a lesson, but I think he just liked Daddy better than Vernon. You couldn't help but like my daddy. He was a whole lot like Aunt Gladys, always ready to do any or everything. But he was also easily persuaded by certain people. That's probably how the whole thing happened. They were drinking and just did it on a whim. Vernon got to thinking about that little check, and more he thought, the madder he got. And they said, "We'll fix that, Orville." And they lived high for a time. From what my mama told me, Daddy and Lether thought they'd find a job down in Texas. But all they come back with was a new shirt, a new pair of pants, and a big hat. She said Daddy thought he was really going to be Mr. Big. But as soon as he stepped off the train, they were waiting for him, and they just hauled him right on off. So he changed his new duds for jail rags. They got in Vernon first, of course. Daddy was 22, just old enough to realize he made a drastic mistake. When my mama told that story, it was a comical thing. But Parchman always had the reputation as being one of the toughest prisons in the South. Of course, Parchman had that famous chain gang. The story went around that Vernon got bullwhipped, and that's why he never went shirtless after that. They got 3 years. But they only had to serve 8 months, June 1st, 1938 to February 6th, 1939. Aunt Gladys got a petition up, I believe, and they got out on what they call a hardship case. When Vernon came out, he had the attitude that I've done my time, so people should give me some slack now. But they didn't. It didn't change him. Even his friends thought, no, he's gone to jail. It's best not to socialize because people might think I'll get into trouble with him too. It made it very difficult for both him and my daddy. By the time I was born in 1943, Daddy was sharecropping again. And that was a hard life. Lamar Fike. The Presleys were so poor that all three of them had to sleep in the same bed. Yep, and of course, while Vernon was gone, Elvis slept with his mama. He slept with her until he was 13 when they moved to Memphis. But this stuff that Dee Presley, Vernon's second wife, told the National Enquirer about Elvis and Gladys being lovers is just totally nuts and total bullshit. I don't care what Vernon supposedly said. I knew Gladys very well, and that never happened. Marty Lacker. I was interviewed by Entertainment Tonight on that, and I said right on the camera for people to see, that just can't be true. Many young boys sleep with their mother, especially when they're scared. Elvis's father was in prison for a long time, and I'm sure that was a frightening situation. And don't forget, there was only one bed in that whole damn house. To say that Elvis got off sleeping with his mother or that she molested Elvis is a downright lie. There is no way in the world that that happened. Billy Smith. When Vernon was in prison, Gladys and Elvis got extremely close. They were each other's only world. And Gladys wanted to make Elvis feel special. She'd buy him treats, like ice cream, or maybe something a little out of the ordinary if she could. She was always thinking about Elvis. Lamar Fike. Elvis had his own knife and fork and plate when he was a child. His own cup and glass, too. You know how you'll sometimes be sitting at a table and you'll reach over and get something off of somebody's plate and eat it? If you reached over to Elvis's plate, he'd cut your arm off, man. That was one of his bad things. He just could not share food. He was a pretty complicated dude. Billy Smith. The only thing I can remember about tableware is that Elvis used to carry a knife and fork in his back pocket because he didn't like to eat with anybody else's, okay? He'd eat from your dishes, but not with your silverware. He didn't break that habit until he went into the Army. Used to take that knife and fork to school with him, too. He didn't eat or drink after anybody, either. And he didn't want you to drink after him, ever. Elvis was a pretty resourceful kid, even at a real early age. Mama used to tell this story about him from when he was about 4. He wanted to go downtown, so Aunt Gladys and Mama took him. Back then, you could get a sack of bananas for about 10 cents. Elvis loved bananas, so he wanted to carry them. And the sack was as big as he was. When he got tired, he had Aunt Gladys and Mama take turns carrying him instead of the sack. He held on to the sack the whole time. After a while, Aunt Gladys tried to talk Elvis into giving them a banana, but he wouldn't do it. Then she tried to shame him into it. Finally, he reached down and pulled one out. He thought about it for a while, and then he broke the banana in two and gave each of them half. So they both got half of the banana. Lamar Fike. Elvis once told me all his friends were girls when he was growing up, from the earliest age. Billy Smith. Elvis related to women more than he did men. He had very few male friends in his early childhood. He was just with women more. Elaine Dundy wrote that Elvis's pattern, his personality after Captain Marvel Jr., the comic book hero. She said that's where he got this humble and humorous side and this notion to save his family. And she says he patterned his look after Captain Marvel Jr. as well, the hair, the stance, the costumes he wore in the 70s, with the capes and even the TCB lightning bolt. Maybe so. He started reading those about the time he started first grade. So he might have absorbed all that and not really have known it. You know that story about how Elvis liked to watch girls wrestle in white cotton panties? That was supposed to have been his biggest turn-on, that and two women together. Well, when he was 4 or 5, my mama and Aunt Cletus were dancing together to some music. They were up on a trunk, waving their skirts around like they just didn't care. And Elvis was in the room, and the more they danced, the more excited he got, saying, "Mommy and Auntie dancing." He grabbed my mama with the leg, and he said, "Oh, my Peter." Well, Gladys went wild. She yanked him up and yelled out, "You all quit that damn dancing." She pointed at Elvis and said, "Look what you're doing to him." When my mama told me that, I like to died. Lamar Fike. It was about this age, 5 or 6, that Elvis said his nightmares started. I'm not sure when the sleepwalking started, though. Billy Smith. In 1940, a year after Uncle Vernon got out of prison, him and Aunt Gladys and Elvis moved down to Pascagoula, Mississippi, so Vernon could work at the shipyards in the Work Progress Administration. When Vernon went to prison, either J.D. sold their lot on Saltillo Road or Oval Bean evicted them. So Aunt Gladys had been making the rounds, staying at different people's houses. Her cousin Frank Richards and his family, I know, earning some money during seamstress work and taking in the laundry for folks. They stayed in Pascagoula only about 8 months. I think Uncle Vernon sharecropped for a while when they got back. Marty Lacker. It's funny. I was down in Tupelo recently, and I met some people who told me that none of Elvis's relatives want to talk about him. I said to one woman, "I hear you're Elvis's cousin." And she said, "Yeah, big deal. The fact is, once he left Tupelo, those people never saw him again or even cared." Billy Smith. You hear a lot of different stories about how Elvis got interested in music in the beginning. It came from Shack Rag, which was an area in Tupelo you didn't go into. It was all black. We lived in Saltillo, which is real close to Shack Rag. In order to go a lot of places, we had to walk right by it. You're talking about only maybe 3 or 4 blocks down. Some people say Elvis never heard black music, but he sure did. You could not hear it. The walls were so thin, you'd hear them inside. or they'd be out there singing on their porch. That's where he picked up on a lot of it. Okay, guys, I'm going to unmute you guys because I'm done reading. We got 3 minutes left. I hope you guys enjoyed what I could read so far, and I promise you that I'll read more of it Monday. Oh, crap. I'm going to take that back. Listen to me very carefully. I'm going to be traveling on Monday and Tuesday to get to Arkansas. So I'm not really going to know if I'm going to be able to do a show on Wednesday. We'll have to see how tired I am after the long trip because it's like a 13-hour drive. But no matter what, there'll definitely be a show on Friday. Okay, guys? Definitely.
Okay, Shauna. No worries.
Yeah, okay. But at least we picked a book that we all can agree with now.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to go down the list. Thank you, Miss Sherry, for calling in. I hope you enjoyed this evening.
I did.
Good. Thank you, Brandon and Ellis, for calling in tonight. I hope you gentlemen enjoyed this evening. I hope you guys did.
We did.
Good. And Miss Sue, thank you for calling. I hope you enjoyed what we did get to read.
Oh, I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
You're welcome. And Miss Ann, thank you so much for calling, even with your hurt tooth, honey. You're a trooper. Mwah. Thank you for calling in.
No worries.
Okay, guys. Well, it is my time to go. I love y'all. TCB, God bless y'all. And I'll see you on the other side. Mwah. Bye, guys.
TCB.
Bye. Bye.
There was a man alone. And solitaire's the only game in town.
begins to deal, and still the King of Hearts is well concealed. Another losing game comes to an end, and deals him out again. And goes all around him everywhere he's playing song.